done podcast today because my cat just sleeps on me all day. My cat's been doing that too. Wasn't it assaulting you, Tricchio, last night?
It was. He just had his paw like pressed against my throat while I was trying to play Demigod.
Did it make you play better?
Maybe.
Hello, and welcome to episode 172 of the PC Gamer Podcast for April 16th, 2009. This is your host, Logan Decker, and I've got the usual suspects with me today in the PC Gamer Mobile Studio. There's reviews editor, Dan Stapleton.
I'm not mobile. Where did you get the mobile studio?
Are you moving? Do you have legs?
My chair has wheels on it.
Then you're mobile.
I see.
When's the first time? What's the first PC game you remember playing?
Maybe Civilization. Any game. Civilization 1, maybe. Or, like, I guess if you want to go, like, any game played on a computer.
Any game, yeah.
Maybe Load Runner. Maybe, what's it called? Airborne, where you're shooting down the waves of airplanes.
Oh, yeah. And the little parachute guys.
Yeah,
is that the one? Yeah. And what did you play that on?
Mac SE.
Right. Very nice. Wow, that was SE. I can't remember how long
SE came right after Classic. So it was like the second version of the all-in-one. Was it like a 7-inch screen, black and white?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did your parents get you that, or is that for, like, the whole family?
It was for the whole family. And yeah. At that point, that cost, you know, thousands of dollars. And, yeah, that was an expensive computer for its 2 megabytes of hard disk space. And, I forget how much RAM. It was in the kilobytes of RAM. Mm-hmm.
And how many hours did you put into Civilization when you got your mitts on that?
I could only play that at a friend's house because I didn't have a PC at the time, so I spent a lot of time at a friend's house.
We also have associate editor Evan Lottie today with us.
Hello.
What's the first game you remember playing?
I'm not really sure. I want to say there's this educational game sort of in the same vein as Oregon Trail that a lot of people played called Number Munchers. It was released in 1990, I think, and you sort of played on a grid, and you had these little creatures that would eat math problems and whatnot. The first multiplayer game I remember playing is definitely Quake on a serial LAN in my serial modem in my uncle's basement with just two people, which was a blast and mind-bending and amazing. So, yeah.
What year was Quake 1?
Maybe
95, I think.
Yeah.
I think the first multiplayer game I played was probably either Marathon or Doom.
Also joining us today is intern Josh Augustine. Hello, Josh.
Hello, hello.
Why didn't you tell us what the first game you remember playing is?
I was trying to remember which King's Quest game it is, but it's definitely King's Quest. I can't remember which one. I'm looking on Wikipedia trying to see.
Do you start and there's like a wizard? I think that's number 2. Like
all I remember is like... You play as a female, so I'm thinking it's King's Quest. Maybe it wasn't, though. Did one of them you play as a female and you're, like, walking through the meadows and there's, like, a satyr?
I don't think so.
Oh. Queen's Quest?
Yeah. I never played it, but that sounds like an awesome game. Walking through the meadows. This is hard.
I just remember because it was probably, like, a 10x10 grid, and me and my dad would draw, like, the maps out of each area so you remembered where each zone was. Oh.
Like where the picnic table was?
Yeah, because there's some, you know, if you walked in where, like, the dragon was, if you walked in there, he'd come and eat you, so you had to be sure to avoid that square and stuff.
Fair enough.
So you didn't grow up with a console or anything like that?
No, I'd say Sega Genesis, but that was later.
Yeah, right. Okay, so this is, like, how old I am. I remember we had the very first console system ever put in our house, and it was called the Odyssey 2. Now, I don't know why the first console was called the Odyssey 2, but maybe the Odyssey 1 blew up and killed everybody. But it was so old that really all it could do was show blocks of color on your TV. So you had to it came with all these plastic overlays that you had to stick that adhered to your TV screen with static electricity. So for like the haunted house game, you put the haunted house overlay on the TV and it made like little blocks of light appear, and you would control a block of light and you would go from room to room. And yep. if you hit the ghost, it would go da-da and there would be a weird sound. And you even had to put your own English on the ball when you played Pong to make it sort of careen off the paddles in the right way. I mean, it was just one tiny little step away from hand crank.
Did you load it on punch cards?
I don't even remember, like, if it had cartridges or not. It was so long ago. But then we did end up getting a Apple II, and that's when I started playing Ultima and Lode Runner, all that gets in all the text adventures. The Scott, what was his name? Oh, Scott McAdam, something like that. Man, good old days. Finally, where would we be without podcast producer Andy Bauman, who's going to tell us about the first games he played?
I think I just watched my dad play a lot of games, like King's Quest and some old Sierra games. But I also remember playing...
Because you were handcuffed to the chair? Or...
just because I was curious. I was really young.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I remember using an Apple II, and instead of playing games, we just like used the paint program and just made random crap. That was kind of a game in itself, just making fun stuff. And then there's a game where you like it taught you how to type, and you just pushed a button. You like it would give you a button, and it would fly across the screen like it'd be like going on ice skates or something. And then you'd have this little creature, and you had to jump over it. And so you just had to all you had to do was like push the right button, and it would jump over it. And it was like a way good way to teach you typing. And I remember it got really hardcore when you had to like find the symbols. You had to find like the at symbol, and you didn't know where it was because you were a little kid. And it got really... It was, like, the most, like, fun game ever. And then, of course, the old Oregon Trail, like, on the Apple II.
Oh, yeah.
And all Oregon Trail rocks.
Yeah. There's an iPhone version, apparently, that's supposed to be really good. I kind of want to try it out.
Yeah, but it's, like, $1,000 or something like that.
Oh, well, ridiculous.
That's, like, $5, but whatever.
But in Apple bucks, that's, like, $1 million.
When I was a kid, when we got our Apple II, I remember... that I got really obsessed with it, and I used it all the time. And I used to go back to the shop where we got it a lot, and we kind of struck up this deal where I would help sort of show off the Apple IIs on the floor to people who came in, and then I got to take all the binder of all the games home at night and play them. So basically, I got to play all the games that they had, and it was just, it was decadent, you know? I had the treasure of the Aztecs in that binder to take with me home with me every night. And there was one game that I'll never forget because it was so trippy. It was called the Prisoner. And I don't know if it was an official tie-in with the game because it was very much like with the TV series because it was a lot like that. It was just you were trapped in this computer program and it wouldn't give you any instructions. There would just be a screen with some numbers and you kept typing things to see what would happen until you figured out how to get out of that screen. And then it would give you another screen, which was another puzzle with no instructions, no help, and nothing but this computer sort of taunting you, like you're never getting out.
No instructions? That sounds like Demigod.
Hey now.
No, indeed. Demigod came out and I guess it didn't have any tutorial level, did it?
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Like Will Smith from Maximum PC came like storming upstairs going, how the hell am I supposed to figure out how to play this game? he had jumped into like a skirmish and just gotten his ass absolutely kicked because he had no idea what he was doing. There is a manual for it. Though if you download the game off of Impulse, then you have to kind of have to dig to find the manual. It's in the Demigod and then / bin folder for no good reason. I mean, it's like why would you look in the bin folder for a manual?
Yeah,
you look in there to find the EXE, not the manual.
I look in there for sound effects I can use.
Right. But you know, the manual you kind of expect to be in the root game install directory, right?
Yes.
I sent an email to the PR for Stardock telling him to you should have a link in the Impulse menu where you right click on the game in the context menu. There should be a link to view manual. So we'll see how fast they implement that. the clock started yesterday.
Yeah, that's a bit of a facepalm, you know, just to, you know, shove it in, you know, we'll just stick it in there.
Right. Of course,
if you don't have a tutorial level, you know.
Right. If you bought the game at retail, you don't have that problem because you have the manual, you know, the physical manual.
Yeah.
Of course, if you bought the game at retail at GameStop before the game came out, then there was a big problem because you couldn't. It's pretty much a multiplayer only game. You know, there's also skirmish, but they weren't like the servers weren't up and running and ready for a bunch of people to start playing. So
well, that's because they broke the street date, right?
Right.
Yeah. How early did they start selling it?
It was like I think a couple days. A bunch of people at Stardock had to come in over Easter weekend to get that fixed up and ready.
Oh, I would be so mad at GameStop if I was one of them.
Yeah, I don't think they're pleased.
Yeah, it was supposed to release on Tuesday of this week, so the 12th, and I guess it came out on the 10th or so that weekend. Yeah, so that's really a shame. And, I mean, it's even more a shame that it has to be GameStop, which, as we know, isn't really known for promoting PC games that well. So
yeah.
On the bright side, that means probably not that many people bought it from them. Kind of have mixed feelings about breaking street dates, because on the one hand, you know, I like to get games a little bit early. That's, you know, it's a win for gamers. But on the other hand, it does tend to screw over, you know, multiplayer support. Or in the case of games that require activation, then you can't even activate them. So, you know.
Well, or if there had been any issues with the game at that stage, you know, there shouldn't be at that late stage. But, you know, whatever. It's not, you know, all you should care about is what the end product is. But if there were still issues at that stage, it could have created bad buzz for the game, which could have been devastating. You know?
Right. They have gotten some bad buzz, and it is unfortunate because there's the CEO of Stardock, Brad Wardell. He's a pretty vocal guy. He has been very forthcoming about exactly why there have been a bunch of connectivity problems with trying to play Demigod Online the last few days. And you know, Stardock has a very very liberal policy about piracy in that they don't put a bunch of obstructive DRM on there. They don't make it, you know, a problem for people that have bought the game legitimately to play it, but they also don't put a whole lot of roadblocks in front of pirates. But in this particular case, they have tracked over 100,000 pirates trying to sign on to their multiplayer servers to play. And that's been gumming up the works for everybody else, all the paying customers.
Holy free holy.
Yeah, so that's been a problem because they weren't expecting. I guess they were expecting, you know, 10 or 20,000 people at a time to try it, and they got, you know, over 100,000.
Did they really try to pirate a multiplayer game? I mean, did
oh yeah,
who would
oh,
have
yeah.
thought people they would get time. Away with it? You know, because
it is a peer to peer game, so it's like it's not a client server setup like a Team Fortress 2 or something like that. Right. So you can play it without any involvement from Stardock whatsoever.
Can you do LAN games?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Evan and I were playing in the office yesterday over LAN. So last night, Evan, Norm Chan, and Will Smith and I were playing until like 2 a.m. We got a...
Yeah, for like 4 hours.
Quite a night of it. We did have some trouble connecting to each other. I guess the router settings are a little bit finicky.
Yes, yeah, I remember Sins of the Solar Empire. I remember having a little bit of trouble getting through router settings and port settings too, but it wasn't too hard.
The odd thing is that since Sins launch, they like completely revamped the multiplayer infrastructure to go through Stardock's like new system that's supposed to be better, and I guess it hasn't been all that much better so far. But that could have something to do with the problems they've been having.
To get it to work, we sort of had to have Norm, who was hosting the game, set his router into super whore mode so it didn't accept anything.
Yeah. Being in the DMZ, so outside the firewall. Although like the three of us, excluding Norm, were able to connect to each other just fine, but Norm couldn't connect, so he had to host and go in DMZ mode. So it was a bit of a hassle. It took us probably 20 or 30 minutes to get it, you know, to the point where we could play a game.
Yeah, but afterwards, very good.
Yeah, afterwards,
but,
it was great.
But the problems are pretty much smoothed out by now.
As of yesterday night, not really. But you know, we'll have to see going forward.
I mean, we should ask ourselves: should launch day problems like that affect a game score?
Yeah, it doesn't really seem fair, does it? I mean, to the game, because it's a lot like saying a movie sucked because
the theater,
your seats at the theater on opening night sucked.
Yeah.
You know, so did the movie suck because of that? No, because you know everybody who watches it, based on your review where you encountered those problems, everybody thereafter is not going to have that problem. They're going to have no idea there was ever a problem. Mm-hmm. So it's not really fair to the game, I don't think. I mean,
everybody agree? Any dissenters?
I think the logic. Yeah. I think the logic is very solid. I think the problem is that the online whatever community people fervor gets in it all in a tussle, and that's terrible for the game. Yeah, and I think that's really bad for games. Like,
oh yeah, yeah, and it's certainly a PR debacle when it goes bad because all of your most vocal loyal fans are the ones that run out and buy the game on day one. They mm-hmm. they put the game in, they want to play, they're really excited to play, and they can't, and they are pissed.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's, and I think in this case, especially since GameStop kind of beat before the actual release date, I mean, you can't blame them for getting a bit backlogged when they weren't ready, for two more days.
Mm-hmm. But, just to play devil's advocate, though, I mean, if you buy the game on the day that it's released, isn't it reasonable to have an expectation that it will work well?
Absolutely.
Yes.
But, yeah. And
so
and
why shouldn't
leave...
it affect? Why shouldn't it affect the score?
Well, I mean,
I know it's a tough question. I'm just for theoretically.
Okay. Look at it this way: if a review is based on the game before it comes out, before it's available to the public, then the reviewer has no way of knowing what the 0 day problems might be.
Wolverine.
So you can't. Yes. There's no way to dock a game for that unless you do it preemptively, which is crazy. If the review is based on the game after it comes out, then nobody who reads that review is going to be affected by 0 day problems. There's really not a lot you can do, and unless you're a vindictive reviewer who had a problem the first day, and holds that against it because it ruined your experience.
Here's one more angle on it then. What if the launch day problems persist into 3-4 weeks, but you didn't cover the issue, you didn't cover the launch day problems because they were assumed to be launch day problems, but they persist. Then what happens?
Yeah, it is a very sticky situation. There is no easy way to cover it. There's probably no good way to cover it at all, unless you've got somebody who is constantly on that game all the time, reporting on it and giving like up to the minute or up to the day at least updates on how things are going, which is tricky to do. And it's more work than just a few people can handle.
So. Yeah,
you can frankly, I can't think of a situation right now, other than GTA 4, which that was true.
Empire Total War actually.
Oh yeah, right.
Maybe another one,
and Hellgate London.
Yeah.
Wait, what's going on with Empire?
They've been pretty good about patching it, and a lot of people have had good experiences with it. But there have been a lot of people that have had persistent crash
bugs. Okay, yeah, I've heard.
Yeah,
it doesn't
slow
support
down and things like that.
It doesn't support SLI very well, is what I've heard as well.
Yeah.
Right, but I mean that I don't know if that was ever promised.
But like,
by
what
anybody.
Game does really?
Sure.
Plenty of them do. Plenty of games do support SLI, but it generally is kind of the last thing to come, especially because so few people actually use SLI, and a lot of enthusiasts do use it, and they get vocal when it doesn't work, but the proportion of people using SLI, Logan, do we have any idea like how many people actually use more than one GPU?
We haven't seen those numbers in a long time, but my guess is that in the next year. And especially the next 2 years, we're probably going to see it less and less and less because single card configs are so powerful now. It's just unbelievable, what the GTX 295 can do and the new 4890. For the first time in as long as I can remember, I'm thinking, wow, I have more, 3D acceleration power than I actually need for any game at the moment.
Right.
And I'm running at 2560.
Whoa!
Yeah, it is pretty astonishing that this is one of the few times that I can remember where the graphics power has outstripped the game development, like the ambition.
Yeah, and
every,
I'm thinking, geez, we've got all this extra headroom. Let's crunch a video in the background or something like that. It's crazy,
Right. The only game that has taxed my system in the last year or two has been GTA, and that shouldn't have.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would mention real quick too, I guess another patch since we played last night has been published for Demigod, Dan.
Right. That's I already installed it.
Yeah, it's supposedly supposed to separate the NAT connection server from the general like lobby system, I guess, a little bit. So that's supposed to make things a little easier for people to connect and kick people. And
it's supposed to make it harder, I guess, more difficult for the pirates to clog up the system.
Wonderful. So.
That aspect never occurred to me that piracy could have that effect.
Oh yeah, and that's you know that like StarDock, you know they are really adamant about not letting piracy affect people, but
that's so aggro. Sorry.
even they have you know a big problem with it because pirates will contact tech support.
when they want to know why
something isn't working, that they will bother tech support, and that's a big expense for any developer.
Okay, see, I didn't support the death penalty before, but I mean, I think maybe it's the only solution.
I mean, if we've learned anything in the last week with all that news of pirates in, I guess, the Indian Ocean,
Somalia.
All we need is some Navy SEALs to snipe them off their deck and take
care of that. Oh, good. Nice. Yeah, because what else are they doing? You know, I mean, bring them home and train them on you know, some domestic enforcement.
Tech terrorism, yes.
If you call tech support for your pirated game, you will be shot by Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
Straight up. No, yeah.
Jeez. But, you know, I mean, again, you got to hand it to StarDock, putting their money where their mouth is, you know, and saying this is not good for customers, and we're not going to do it, you know. And they realize, you know, they deal with these problems and these hassles. Because they know that, you know, customers just don't want this stuff. They don't want to be punished for what other people do, you know? And
if only they'd put a tutorial level on Demigod. But you know, that is, you know, to take Will's side of it. You know, I do absolutely agree that in this day and age a game that does not teach you how to play it without reading the manual is kind of that's a failing, you know. It's I know there are a lot of people out there that love having the physical manual and paging through it and reading all the backstory and all that stuff. I've never liked doing that, honestly. I mean, I did it out of necessity when there were games that were just too complex to understand without doing it, or this that didn't have a tutorial. And you know, I wanted to enjoy the game, so I would do the legwork to do it. But I would much rather just jump in the game and learn by doing. You know, having it hold my hand for a level or two until I'm ready to you know ride without training wheels.
Well, that's especially true for a game that relies on sort of the understanding of what an RTS feels like, what a game like WoW feels like with cooldown abilities and things like that, but does it in a different way. In that players that have played games in those genres have certain expectations that are sort of have to shift in order to play Demigod. The idea of attrition and buying items and things like that for your character and working together and all that, so
yeah, it's not all that intuitive, especially for newcomers. Newcomers, you know, please read the manual before you jump in, because you will be frustrated if you don't.
I loved the whole manual experience, you know, reading it before I played the game and all that. But there are no longer any manuals, really. I don't buy anything off retail anymore, so. You know, that's just one less reason, you know, not to.
The manuals are in PDF. You can still get those jollies.
It's not the same. You know, you're like kicking back while the game's installing, you know, and flipping through it, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
I guess it's the dead tree effect. You know, I love it.
With a game with a long install process, I guess, you know, there are a few, like Company of Heroes in particular takes forever to install. I might have read the manual during that. Maybe like during the install screen, they should just put up pages from the manual.
And then you can read the manual again as Company Heroes validates its media after everything you do. It drives me crazy.
Well, I don't know if it would validate the media if you're connected to the internet.
Yeah, it doesn't validate after you if you're connected to the internet. But if you've not, I've discovered every time you click OK on anything, it validates the media.
Wow.
And it's just laughing at you. You know.
You have no internet connection.
Yes. But
Relic also. That's something that annoyed me a little bit about Dawn of War 2, was that there was no tutorial for the multiplayer. And the multiplayer in that is different enough from the single player. You know, it's pretty significantly different.
Oh, very much so. Player.
So it's different enough that it is a problem for newcomers. You kind of have to go on YouTube or gamereplays.org or something and watch some recorded games in order to get an idea of what the hell to do.
Yeah, I mean, you never have to build things or deal with tech tiers in single player. That's a pretty huge mechanic, and buy abilities while you're playing.
You don't build things in the multiplayer either, really, unless you're an engineer commander, and then you can build defense turrets.
I mean, but build units, I guess, is what I'm
saying. Right,
yeah.
It's significantly different. The abilities are different. There's the whole war gear setup that's in the single player isn't there.
Yeah.
So it's very different, and it's not all the changes aren't that intuitive. There's no tutorial to teach you how to do it, which is a bummer, especially with the Tyranids. They're really hard to learn.
So listeners out there, we would love to hear your feedback. Do you think launch day problems in a game should affect game scores? And do games need tutorial levels, even if whether or not they have manuals? Let us know. We will give you the PC Gamer Podcast email and phone number at the end of the podcast. So, after the hints of a Fallout MMO, we have a new development. Mr. Stapleton, can you tell us about that?
It was part of the licensing agreement, or the transfer of the rights to the Fallout franchise from Interplay to Bethesda when they made Fallout 3. Initially, Bethesda had just licensed the rights to make Fallout 3. Then Interplay realized, "Hey, we have no money. We want to buy this license off of us." So Bethesda said, "Sure, we'll buy that license." But Interplay said, "Wait a second, we still want to make a Fallout MMO." So Interplay leased the rights back for the purpose of making an MMO, but it was conditional. They had to meet certain conditions in terms of getting funding and like when they went into full scale development, and you know they had to do it within a certain amount of time. And Bethesda is now apparently saying, according to a Kotaku post, they're now saying that Interplay has not lived up to those terms, and they want to terminate the agreement. They want to say, okay, you didn't start it or develop it as much as we wanted you to by now, so you can't work with the license anymore. Which would mean basically that either Interplay would have to trash everything they've done so far and just move on, or they would have to create a new universe, which to use what they've already got. So another Fallout-esque post-apocalyptic universe to base it on. Kind of
that doesn't sound likely.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could do it. I mean, you could just, do some horrible knockoff. I mean, Fallout itself is kind of a knockoff of Wasteland, which is an old RPG. I believe that when they were making Fallout, they initially wanted to do Wasteland 2, but didn't have the rights, so they created their own. So Interplay could do the same thing,
Fall In or.
We nearly had a similar situation late last year with Fear 2, right? Sierra was sort of maybe developing a Fear game of its own, and Monolith and WB had Project Origin, but they didn't have the Fear name, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
It was a really bizarre situation where they had the rights to the story, but not to the name. So they were able to use Alma, and they were able to use all the characters and continue the storyline in Project Origin. But it wasn't going to be Fear 2 until kind of the last moment when they got the rights back.
I still think the sequel should just be called Seer, Second Encounter Assault Recon.
Yeah.
And there'd be a lot of fire-based weaponry anyway.
Lol.
Yeah. But, I can't say I'm too surprised to see Interplay not live up to their end of the Fallout bargain, considering they haven't done anything in recent years. I mean, I guess they had hired on a couple of the original Fallout developers. One of them then left to do something else with, I guess they were some former Troika guys who were also former Black Isle guys. So they really hadn't gone into like full scale development, like Bethesda wanted them to. We saw like some concept art, but you know anybody can throw together some concept art. It doesn't surprise me at all that this has fallen through.
But who holds the rights to the movie?
Bethesda.
All right.
Bethesda holds all the rights, except for the MMO stuff, which they licensed out to Interplay. Or they just like, for example, with the Star Trek MMO, Cryptic has the rights to make a Star Trek MMO, but they don't have the rights to make any other kind of game. It's kind of weird how they break down the distinction there. Another example would be like Lord of the Rings Online. Turbine made Lord of the Rings Online while EA had the rights to make Lord of the Rings games from, you know, everything else. Mm-hmm. Just everything but an MMO. So they do draw distinctions there.
I really like to be in one of those meetings at, like, LucasArts, for example, where they decide how they're going to chop up their license into different genres.
Lucas is kind of, I guess they do kind of something similar. I mean, I don't know if they actually, no, actually with both Galaxies and the Old Republic, I think they're co-publishers. So it's right. They're not actually licensing out anything. Kind of a different situation with them.
Yeah, I suppose they do work more directly with their IP, and I mean they want to protect it as much as they can, watch over it a little bit better, I guess.
Everybody who plays online games, and especially those of you like myself who do a lot of who download all their games from services, will be glad to know that the wave that was threatening us with metered or capped broadband appears to be settling back down. Who is it? Time Warner, I believe, today is backing off from their threat to cap.
Right. They had been talking about doing a tiered payment plan where, based on how much you downloaded, that's how much you would pay, which was, you know, pretty absurd considering, you know, how prevalent streaming video is becoming, how much streaming audio, streaming, you know, and downloading of games. And it's really kind of a bullet dodge that not only have they now, they got such a big, you know, uprising of, you know, screw this from all their customers. Even some senators got involved. Chuck Schumer from New York. So we've gotten an article here, called, it's actually from the Democrat and Chronicle.com. They're saying that Charles Schumer announced today that Time Warner was backing off of this plan. Even before Time Warner has made the announcement, hopefully by the time this podcast goes up, Time Warner will have announced themselves that they're abandoning the plan. That would have been a disaster for anybody who downloads a lot.
Democrat and Chronicle does sound like, you know, something somebody is printing out of their basement, doesn't it?
Except
you know,
it, yeah.
Sounds
except
like
it's not even being printed.
I don't know.
it sounds like a detective duo.
Democrat and Chronicle.
They solve crimes.
Except the detectives are anthropomorphized animals.
Yeah, I think the Democrat is definitely the bad cop in that situation.
Is he the one that wears? Is he the one with the mustache or the sunglasses?
they can't have both.
Well, if this was like the 70s, they could. But
yeah.
Let's take some listener questions before this goes downhill.
Hey guys, this is Spunky. About OnLive, if that really takes off, what do you think is going to happen to mods? Love the show. Keep it up. Bye.
Well, you wouldn't be able to mod anything that's on OnLive. So that would be bad for
you'd
modding.
Have to pay extra for the mod service of OnLive, is my guess.
Well, I mean, in order to make a mod, in order to make a mod, you have to have access to the game files. So, and then... You know, but with OnLive, all the game files are hosted on their end, so you wouldn't be able to tinker with that unless they came up with some way to do it, which sounds like it would be more trouble than it would be worth for them. So that would not be good for modding. However, it's really unlikely to, you know, eliminate PC gaming as it exists anytime soon.
I mean, worry in 10 years.
Yeah.
It's like Jurassic Park. Modding will find a way. Life finds a way.
That was the answer of the month. That was terrific.
I guess sort of like the counter to this concern is that OnLive will hopefully not enable people to cheat or input mods that allow them to alter a game in a negative way that right. impacts other people's experience. So
it's we'll a trade-off.
See. Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, if the service really became that popular, yeah, they'll figure out some way to implement them. But again, I don't think that's a concern anyone will have for years and years. Although it's nice to see stuff like, you know, the beating back the bandwidth, tiered bandwidth and bandwidth caps and all that will certainly help services like these develop and get off the ground.
Okay, next question.
Mm-hmm. All right, this is Fuzzmaster up in Seattle again. And I just finished the latest podcast, and I just want to know if there's anything that anybody said on that entire podcast that Dan did not disagree with. Good God, man, get over it. You were so negative. But on the good side, it was nice to have Gary back on the podcast. But, geez, can you lighten up? Thanks, bye.
Disagree.
God damn.
I don't know. I don't remember specifically what I was arguing about on that. But how boring would a podcast be though if everyone were agreeing the whole time?
It wouldn't be Democrat and Demander. What was it again?
At least we're not out there teabagging. Okay.
Oh.
how unfortunate a choice of terminology.
Hey, you know, if Fox can say it, so can I.
I believe it was CNN.
We cherish our dissent here at PC Gamer, and but we also cherish our podcast feedback. So thank you very much. Next question.
This question seems to be about the last week. There was a guy asking about naval games, and he has some suggestions. So it's like a listener to listener.
Belly butt.
We connected them.
This is Zoomboy 27. With respect to Nelson the Burglar's request for tactical battleship games or naval games. You might want to take a look at Storm Eagle Studios. They have two 3D battleship games, one called Distant Guns for the Russian-Japanese War of 1905 and Jutland for 1916. Matrix Games, on a more modern note, also has Harpoon 3 Advanced Naval Warfare, much more about maps and plotting than 3D models, but fairly advanced and fairly complex. I played it maybe about 10 years ago, but this has been updated for Windows. Matrix also has various other games of a tactical or strategic nature. So those are two options that Nelson the Burglar can try. This is Zoomboy 27. Good luck.
Jeez, guys, get an IRC channel.
I think those are fairly hardcore strategy simulation games, which you're certainly encouraged to try if you're into that. But I think what the caller was asking for last week was something a little bit more casual. If I recall correctly.
He's not looking for knots. He's looking for just miles per hour increments for his boats, yeah.
Yeah, but... certainly try it out if that's what floats your destroyer.
I see what you did there.
That was really savory.
Hey, my name is Dennis from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Yeah. What up, Dennis?
Walking through a big box retailer the other day, and I saw Sins of a Solar Empire mismarked for only $9.99. So obviously I picked it up, rushed to the register. I thought my hopes would be dashed, and when they rang it up, it would come up with the correct price. But no, I actually picked it up for $10, brand new box copy. So to make up for any money that I may have shorted Stardock of, I did go online immediately and purchase the entrenchment update. But anyway, I was wondering if you guys have ever run across some similarly surprising details in your bargain hunts for games. Love the podcast, and I'll keep on listening. Thanks.
I don't know if I've ever gotten that lucky.
Where were you, Dennis?
It's a big box retailer, so it's got to be either Costco or
I'm trying
Sam's
to think.
Club or whatever.
There's only a couple Best Buys around.
Oh, does Best Buy even count as a big box retailer?
I thought it did, right? Or maybe not.
I think they're just a regular retailer.
Oh, okay.
The only one I can remember is I had the unfortunate experience of being in a Best Buy around like 2000, 5, and for whatever reason, they have, like, I mean, they have this section of kind of like freeware puzzle games and like Mahjong and things like that, and just in jewel cases. And for whatever reason, they had Grim Fandango in there for under $10.
You know, that reminds me. Like, maybe 4 years ago, I was at a Fry's Electronics and found Fallout 1 and 2. It was a jewel case kind of thing with, you know, just the jewel cases for both games.
Yeah, they're bundled together.
Yeah, $5.
Yeah, I got that at Kmart. That's filthy. Time ago, too. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's even half of good old games price.
I got Penumbra Plague around Christmas time for $10, but I don't know if that's actually how much it costs or not. Seemed like a deal.
I'm always subscribing to the RSS feeds for, you know, things like Gizmodo, The Consumerist, Boing Boing Gadgets, and they all do every weekday. They have, you know, gadget deals and stuff like that. And every once in a while, there'll be a game at an insanely low price on there. You know, like, I think they had Tomb Raider for $5 somewhere. You know, just sort of lost, not even loss leaders. Well, they might be loss leaders to get you to go to Amazon or Newegg or something like that. So that's a great way to find. It's like virtual bargain bin shopping.
Yeah. CheapAssGamer.com has a lot of that stuff. They're a little more console-centric, but
yeah,
it's a big community that actively seeks out those kind of deals.
Like, for my iPhone, I have this, one of my favorite apps is called Bargain Bin, and all it does is shows you what went discounted or went free that day. And so it's, you know, it's how I browse applications now. I just wait to see, you know, I wish it would tell me when, you know, an application that I want is discounted, which it happens all the time. But I would love to see a similar thing like that for the PC. So if anyone knows, like, you know, any deal watching services for PC games, please let us know at PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com.
The Steam weekend deals are, you know, pretty good too.
And, yeah.
Impulse does those.
Yep.
I was going to say.
And Steam and Impulse both have RSS feeds, which we noted in the latest issue.
Right.
I tried to get a good deal once on one of those after Thanksgiving sales or whatever, and there's all these games for, like, I think it's like $8 or something. It's all, you know, primetime games. This is a couple of years back. There's also a super cheap monitor, so I went and I waited all night from 10 o'clock at night until like 5 or the next morning out in the cold, and I got there and some guy just ran and grabbed a whole bunch of them. And the deal was you could only buy like 2 or 3 per person. And he had brought like a group of 9 little kids with him. And he's like, oh no, they're all buying 3. And so he just grabbed them all. I was so bummed. So no, I have not found any good deals.
Andy, you should cue violin music when he begins telling that story.
Done and done.
Oh, hey.
That's why I hate little children.
The current Steam deal is 25% off of Dawn of War 2, which is not bad at all.
Good God. I mean, it surprised me just how quickly and how aggressively they discount stuff. It's
I'd like to note that just this week, Left 4 Dead dropped down to $29 on a lot of websites, Best Buy and Amazon.
That's interesting.
But, yeah.
It's still $50 on Steam.
Yeah, it's only 40 at GameStop now, too, so Steam looks like the only one that didn't drop down.
Hey, PC Gamer, Justin here in Las Vegas. I'm a huge RTS fan. Love every minute of it. And been really really loving the fact that we've received so much, Dawn of War 2, Tales of Valor, and so on, and we're receiving Demigod next week. But we'll have to look forward to after that. StarCraft 2 is who knows how far off that is. So, and your guys' infinite wisdom, what is there ahead of us that you have seen and not been able to really talk about until maybe now? So, love what you guys are doing. Keep it up. Talk to you later.
Ruse.
Ruse could be cool. I still need to see more on that one before I get excited about it. But I'll read your preview, Evan, when you're done with that. I think StarCraft 2 is probably closer than we think, or than you think. It's probably, you know, it's definitely going to be this year. I'd put money on it being this year. So yeah, don't think like that's never going to come. We have an announcement of an RTS in the upcoming issue, the August issue, which we can't talk about yet, but I'm a little bit excited about it myself.
Battleforge is out there getting decent reviews.
Battleforge.
Men of War is out there getting good reviews, kind of Tales of Valor-like, I guess. What else? League of Legends, it's sort of a Dota game, like Demigod. But if you mentioned that, if you're still interested in that, that's one worth checking out later this year as well.
Thank you for picking up my slack. since I stopped doing the preview section, I've lost my perspective on all the upcoming ones. And I apparently also forgot about two that we just reviewed. But anyway. there's more coming. There's supposed to be a lot of DLC for both Empire Total War and Dawn of War 2 coming our way too, so.
Playlists.
Nice.
About those things. And then lists.
Mr. Augustine, what have you been playing? Tell us.
Ooh, always World of Warcraft. The patch 3.1 hit servers yesterday, which brought all the new stuff. I've been watching Andy Salisbury, the old intern. He's on every night, I'm sure, doing Ulduar, the new dungeon. So exploring all that. Finally got my Uber Saw on my medic in Team Fortress 2 just last night, which I am loving. As soon as I got it, the very first thing I did was stab a spy in the face with it, and it just felt really good. And I've also been playing a bit of XCOM, which is definitely a game I wish had a tutorial because I am completely confused.
Oh, that's right. You missed my walkthrough. I'll have to give you some pointers later.
I would definitely appreciate that. I mean, it looks really fun. I spent like 20 minutes trying to figure out how to move my guys onto a plane. And
yeah, we did a little. Everyone gathered around my monitor, and I showed everybody how to play because that is another game.
It doesn't look human. Kill it.
Yes.
Mr. Bowman.
that is another game that doesn't have a tutorial, but it was a different time then.
Yeah.
Tell us about your playlist this week, Mr. Bowman.
My playlist consists of a little bit of Red Alert 3, a little bit of Team Fortress 2. I suck at that game. It's been so long, I just can't even play it anymore, I don't think. I think that, like John Madden, I'm going to announce my retirement from TF2.
What, it's not like a bicycle? You get back on it and, you know, oh, I know how to do that.
Yeah, but then everybody else just passes you and, like, kicks you as they go by. And you fall.
That's not good.
You scrape your knee.
I think Andy is announcing his retirement like Lance Armstrong. Because it is like a bicycle. And he will get back on it.
You're right. And then
and come out of retirement and win another Tour de France.
Maybe. And then I also
one test.
got back into Vampire Story. I'm going to finish that game, finally. I haven't played it since January. That's ridiculous. It's a really good game.
You'll be like, who are these people?
Yeah, I was like, am I supposed to do again?
They're making a second one.
That's good, because
yeah.
It didn't get fair reviews, I feel. Rawr. Anger. Anyway.
Well, I am finally really getting into the meat of two games. One contemporary classic, one old classic, XCOM and Left 4 Dead. I finally have the time to devote to Left 4 Dead. And I know I'm way behind the curve, but, you know, this way I get to make sure that I didn't have to experience any of those launch problems, right? Hey! No, it's fantastic. And XCOM is just now starting to pay off dividends. Some hours into the game when I'm really into it and I'm really good at bug squashing.
How are your casualty rates?
Extremely high.
Do you have any soldiers that are really trying to prove themselves and gain some experience and become
Yeah, but they tend to I tend to overuse them and then they fall. I need to be a little more strategic about how I deploy my best soldiers.
You keep the sharpshooters in the back and then you send the fodder out to scout. And the sharpshooters.
Well, I wish I could just have more red shirts, you know, just strap bombs to them and have them run out there. You know?
You can do that. You can actually do that.
You can even name them Red Shirt 1, Red Shirt 2.
Okay, so Logan, pro tip. What you do is you buy high explosives. You can get those off the shelf. Equip them with a lackey, a red shirt. And then you prime the explosive, which I'm pretty sure it doesn't go off until the soldier until you drop it, so it won't go off in his hands. But when he's killed, if you charge him at an alien, he gets gunned down, and after that turn he will explode and hopefully take out the.
I like that.
It's ruthless. It's not a very humane strategy. It's frowned on by the Geneva Convention. But
jeez. It's war. It's, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Yep. If you want to make an omelet, you know,
you have to break high explosives.
Absolutely. And what have you been playing this week, Dan?
Well, let's see. I have been playing some Demigod last night, which was a blast. I was enjoying that.
It was fantastic.
We need to spend a little more time with it because we had some like vast discrepancies in like how many kills people were getting. Like we were playing against the AI, a normal AI, because we were also trying to figure it out, 4v4 match. But Norm was playing as the unclean beast once and killed like three times as many AI demigods as anybody else. So something was a little bit weird there, but we're still trying to figure out the nuances of all the demigods. The generals in particular are hard to get high kill counts, but they're good for taking out structures, in our experience. Also, the reason I am not in the office today is because I am powering through The Sims 3 for review, which is taking up a lot of time, and I'll talk more about that later. One question I had for you, Josh, was, and this kind of ties back to one of our earlier discussion topics, was did you play WoW on launch day?
No, I was like a month late to the party.
I actually did.
There were still tons of problems.
I actually played WoW on launch day.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't have problems until about the day after launch day, actually. That's when the server queues started. But I got a copy like super early at midnight or something, you know, because I had been playing in the beta and I was way into it. So there wasn't any problems right off the bat, but like the second time I tried to log in, that's when the servers were overloaded and they were like migrating, and like you'd be leveling up and they'd be like, all right, the server's shutting down for an hour while we like migrate it. So, yeah, there were a couple. Yeah, there were some problems.
So you have to wonder how the zero-day problem review would have affected WoW. What kind of score would it have gotten?
Oh, my gosh. It would have been abysmal.
There'd be like 14 million instead of 15 million people.
Yeah, I remember logging into the servers and joining the queue just to play the game. And then me and my roommate would go get dinner, we'd go hang out with friends, we'd come back a few hours later, and, you know, we might be able to play by then.
Wow.
It was just terrible.
Right. So, yeah, that's kind of how I think about it. Is you know, can't judge a game by the first day, or even in some cases, not even, you know, even longer. But, because, you know, the review has to reflect, you know, more of a long-term thing.
Yeah, I mean, the review just needs to be useful for the people to buy, so you can kind of, you know, mention it, say, hey, check this before you buy the game, look in the forums, see how it's going. I mean, I think that's enough.
Right, although that does tend to piss people off, because it's like, well, if I was going to read the forums, why did I read the review? So, it's really difficult to, and obviously you can't please everybody, is the problem. So
I mean, there's also a whole discussion you could be have about trying to review an MMO, too. Like,
oh yeah, we have that discussion
every week.
So we're still thinking about it.
What have you been up to this week?
Well, I had a pleasant weekend with Fear 2. I'm nearly through it, and my two sentence reflection on it is that I think the guns feel bad. I don't like the guns at all, and I think the elementary school stage is brilliant. And
it's a very well designed map. I give it some pretty good credit for the map design, but I also harped on the weapons quite a bit.
I remember you mocking the laser, which is very appropriate.
Doesn't it look like a Ghostbusters proton pack effect from like a 1999 game?
That might be giving it too much credit, to be honest.
it's just a very, very unexciting effect from a laser beam, and I love laser beams.
I mean, the first game literally had a sniper rifle that shot this purple bolt of electricity. It turns someone into a skeleton.
And right,
The equivalent of that in this game is either the laser or this futuristic gun that shoots this very slow glob of blue energy that just kind of floats and maybe hits people that are near it for a certain amount of time and turns them into skeletons. And
that was like the one interesting weapon. It's like the only weapon in the game where I was like, whoa, that was kind of cool.
But it was slow as hell.
Even then, I think I fired it like three or four times total.
Yeah. So Fear 2, I'm about to complete that. I've been playing.
Do you think it's scary?
I'm more interested in like the cool visual effects they do.
So you're not scared.
That makes sense. I'm not really scared. I mean, Alma, like you said, just kind of jumps in your face every once in a while and shakes you.
But do you find it unsettling? Like the elementary school level in particular was, I thought, pretty well done in terms of being creepy and you know, not scary like, you know, I'm crapping my pants, but scary like, you know, spine tingling a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's when I'm playing a scary game, I tend to like combat that kind of atmosphere by sort of swearing back at the game and like getting mad at the enemies. And I mean, like the ghosts, for example, are visually interesting and like very cool, and like you feel like you're in this, get the sense of a different dimension and like different reality. But they're kind of like balloons that just kind of float in front of you and pop with two bullets. You know, it's gameplay wise, exactly. It doesn't really get you. Anyway, so I'm playing Xenoclash for review. That's been going well. And Demigod, of course.
Yeah. I was looking over your shoulder when you were playing Xenoclash. It looks really cool. I'm very interested to read how it plays.
Yeah, things are going in a good direction so far. Yep.
I think that the description we settled on or we came up with anyway was like cartoony style models with realistic style textures.
I mean, it's really tough. I think I'm already sort of, I was brainstorming my lead for the review last night. I was sort of going to make the point of saying to people, like, I really hope nobody tries to make describe this game in a certain way that they describe other games when they say, like, this is Tony Hawk with in a gothic setting. This is GTA with the skateboard. Like it just doesn't seem to apply to this game in the same way. So in terms of the art style, like, you don't want to compartmentalize it or pigeonhole it.
So you're saying that the game is like GTA with a skateboard? that's
skateboard
what I'm getting.
And a Call of Duty style perk system and achievements.
And a fish gun.
I'm in.
Fantastic. Well, that's about all the satellite time we've got today, so send us your questions in MP3 format to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com and get them answered on next week's show. And remember, we'd love to hear what you think about launch day problems and how they should affect review scores, whether or not games need tutorials, and how you find great games on PC, great bargains on PC games. Remember, that's PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com, or just call us toll-free at 877-404-1337 at extension 724 and record your question or comments there. Keep it short and clean, or we'll wash out your email with soap and water. You can also subscribe to our awesome magazine by heading over to PCGamer.com, and, well, you can't miss the subscription form. We're also looking for gamers who crave instant fame by having their awesome screenshots and photos of their rigs and gaming setups printed in the magazine. Send them to letters@PCGamer.com, and you just might see your handiwork in the PC Gamer letters section read the entire world over. For the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is a rock legend, Logan Decker, saying thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to getting together again with all of you next week.
Oh, hey, Dan. Glad you're here.
Oh, yeah.
Who's peeing in bowl?
I'm pouring yellow liquid.
Oh.
If that qualifies.
It sounded like pee.
It sounded like somebody squatting over the chamber pot.
It's been a weird week. What about you?
So, like, are you having a sex change, or,
No, what? I'm just trying to settle back into work after being on vacation, and, like, it's snowing a ton, and I haven't been able to get out.
It's snowing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like,
feet. Ah!
And I haven't been able to get out on it and get on it.
Snow terrifies me.
No, it shouldn't.
It's horrible. It kills people.
It does. I ski over where people have died, like, a lot.
Wait, what's with the phone stuff?
I'm calling Evan.
What is that?
I don't know. I think it's the Skype trying to call Evan.
Interesting.
Oh my god. That sounds
so weird. That's totally Cylon.
Did you dial Mr. Roboto by mistake?
Well, that's about all the satellite time we've got today.
Wait,
so
what?
Send us...
Yes.
I was getting there.
We should just rename playlist segment Logan Always Forgets.
I don't get it. I just don't do it when you think, expect it. I'm going to do it.
Dan, are you downloading XCOM tutorials or something?
No, I've played a
I know, but it sounds like your voice is not getting enough bandwidth. Hold on.
Sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, it's cool. Are you downloading anything or streaming something?
I am not downloading anything.
Is Windows...
Wait, actually, hang on a second.
Is Windows downloading something without your knowledge?
Might be something like to go on. Oh, I think I... Okay. I found the problem. It was a Windows Live sync thing. Oh, God.
Again. Damn it. Curse Windows Live.
Yeah.
Many problems.
Did I repeat that?
Give it a... Hold on. Let me recall you.
What?
Oh.
Oh.
He's going to totally recall you. He's going to recall you totally.
I'm totally recalling you.